The Malloy Program on Bush Speaks Night. Let's go right to it. All right? Stay with me.
The housing market set off a domino effect across our economy. When home values declined, borrowers defaulted on their mortgages, and investors holding mortgage-backed securities began to incur serious losses. Before long, these securities became so unreliable that they were not being bought or sold. Investment banks such as Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers found themselves saddled with large amounts of assets they could not sell.
Found themselves?
They ran out of money needed to meet their immediate obligations, and they faced imminent collapse. Other banks found themselves in severe financial trouble. These banks began holding on to their money, and lending dried up, and the gears of the American financial system began grinding to a halt. With the situation becoming more precarious by the day, I faced a choice.
That noise you hear.
To step in with dramatic government action.
You hear. That's Bush's hands shaking while he's talking on that, where the microphone is. Listen, you'll hear that a lot.
I'm a strong believer in free enterprise. So my natural instinct is to oppose government intervention.
But
I believe companies that make bad decisions should be allowed to go out of business.
Yeah, like everyone you've ever owned.
Under normal circumstances, I would have followed this course.
Yeah, but?
But these are not normal circumstances. The market is not functioning properly.
Oh.
There's been a widespread loss of confidence, and major sectors of America's financial system are at risk of shutting down.
Doesn't he look like a rabbit tonight?
The government's top economic experts warn that without immediate action by Congress, America could slip into a financial panic.
Here's the carrot.
And a distressing scenario would unfold.
Yeah?
More banks could fail, including some in your community.
No.
The stock market would drop even more, which would reduce the value of your retirement account.
No.
The value of your home could plummet. Foreclosures would rise dramatically.
No.
And if you own a business or a farm, you would find it harder and more expensive to get credit.
Kill me now.
More businesses would close their doors, and millions of Americans could lose their jobs.
And no milk for the babies.
Even if you have good credit history, it would be more difficult for you to get the loans you need to buy a car or send your children to college.
So vote for McCain.
And ultimately, our country could experience a long and painful recession.
Oh.
Fellow citizens, we must not let this happen.
Sieg Heil.
I appreciate the work of leaders from both parties in both houses of Congress to address this problem and to make improvements to the proposal my administration sent to them. There is a spirit of cooperation between Democrats and Republicans and between Congress and this administration. In that spirit, I've invited Senators McCain and Obama to join congressional leaders of both parties.
Bring Palin
at the White House tomorrow to help speed our discussions toward
Palin.
A bipartisan bill.
We want Palin.
I know that an economic rescue package will present a tough vote for many members of Congress.
Yeah, but
it is difficult to pass a bill that commits so much of the taxpayers' hard-earned money. I also understand the frustration of responsible Americans who pay their mortgages on time, file their tax returns every April 15th, and are reluctant to pay the cost of excesses on Wall Street.
But
given the situation we are facing,
yeah,
not passing a bill now would cost these Americans much more later.
And no milk for the babies.
Many Americans are asking, how would a rescue plan work? After much discussion, there is now widespread agreement on the principles such a plan would include.
Principle?
It would remove the risk posed by the troubled assets, including mortgage-backed securities, now clogging the financial system. This would free banks to resume the flow of credit to American families and businesses.
Jesus, God.
Any rescue plan should also be designed to ensure that taxpayers are protected.
Milk for the babies.
It should welcome the participation of financial institutions, large and small. It should make certain that failed executives do not receive a windfall from your tax dollars. It should establish a bipartisan board to oversee the plan's implementation. And it should be enacted as soon as possible.
Yeah, like yesterday.
In close consultation with Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, and SEC Chairman Chris Cox, I announced a plan on Friday. First, the plan is big enough to solve a serious problem. Under our proposal, the federal government would put up to $700 billion taxpayer dollars on the line to purchase troubled assets that are clogging the financial system.
Don't forget the babies.
In the short term, this will free up banks to resume the flow of credit to American families and businesses.
You already said this.
And this will help our economy grow.
Oh, sure.
Second, as markets have lost confidence in mortgage-backed securities, their prices have dropped sharply. Yet the value of many of these assets will likely be higher than their current price because the vast majority of Americans will ultimately pay off their mortgages.
Wait, say that again.
The government is the one institution with the patience and resources to buy these assets at their current low prices.
Going too fast.
And hold them until markets return to normal.
Wait, go back to that part.
When that happens, money will flow back to the Treasury assets are sold.
Assets.
And we expect that much, if not all,
their liabilities,
the tax dollars we invest will be paid back.
Go back. No.
The final question is, what does this mean for your economic future?
Fear.
Well, the primary purpose of the steps I've outlined tonight is to safeguard the financial security of American workers and families and small businesses.
Mushroom clouds.
The federal government also continues to enforce laws and regulations protecting your money. The Treasury Department recently offered government insurance for money market mutual funds.
Anthrax!
And through the FDIC, every savings account, checking account, and certificate of deposit is insured by the federal government for up to $100,000.
9/11!
The FDIC has been in existence for 75 years.
Yeah?
And no one has ever lost a penny on an insured deposit.
Until now.
And this will not change.
Oh, okay. All right.
Once this crisis is resolved, there will be time to update our financial regulatory structures.
Right! Okay. Yeah.
Our 21st century global economy remains regulated largely by outdated 20th century laws.
That's only
recently we've seen how one company
can
grow so large that its failure jeopardizes the entire financial system.
Can you back up?
Earlier this year, Secretary Paulson proposed a blueprint that would modernize our financial regulations.
Wait.
For example, the Federal Reserve would be authorized to take a closer look at the operations of companies across the financial spectrum.
Why the Federal Reserve?
That their practices do not threaten overall financial stability.
Slow down!
There are other good ideas.
Yeah?
And members of Congress should consider them.
Name one.
As they do, they must ensure that efforts to regulate Wall Street do not end up hampering our economy's ability to grow.
Oh, yeah, okay.
In the long run, Americans have good reason to be confident in our economic strength. Despite corrections in the marketplace and instances of abuse.
Wait.
Democratic capitalism is the best system ever devised.
Wait a minute. Back up.
It has unleashed the talents and the productivity and entrepreneurial spirit of our citizens. It has made this country the best place in the world to invest and do business.
I have a question.
And it gives our economy the flexibility and resilience to absorb shocks, adjust, and bounce back.
Mr. Bush, I have a...
Our economy is facing a moment of great challenge. But we've overcome tough challenges before.
Yeah.
And we will overcome this one.
Oh, okay.
I know that Americans sometimes get discouraged by the tone in Washington.
I'm hungry.
And the seemingly endless partisan struggles.
The baby.
Yet history has shown that in times of real trial, elected officials rise to the occasion.
I'm unemployed.
And together we will show the world once again what kind of country America is.
Can't go bowling anymore.
A nation that tackles problems head on.
Beer money!
Where leaders come together to meet great tests. And where people of every background can work hard, develop their talents, and realize their dreams.
Colored people, too.
Thank you for listening.
Wait!
May God bless you.
No, God! Hey, wait, George! Wait, no! Wait a sec! Okay. Bye! Thanks. Well, I had a couple of questions. Is there going to be a debate this Friday night, Mr. President, or is word come down that that you're going to stop the election anyway? So, you know, why have a debate? Oh my God! So there you go, truth seekers. I didn't hear the first 90 seconds because I was listening to my dumbass theme music, and you know we have to do that. Did he mention anything about the fraud, deception, lies, cheating, deregulation, slicing and dicing, everything in this? He mentions FDIC. You rat bastard. That was one of FDR's plans, that you Republican scum, first of all, fought against at the beginning. Secondly, you've tried to get it removed every single year since it went into effect. And third, it doesn't protect the depositor. It protects the bank. But did he say anything at all? All I heard was those dirty, rotten, fraudulent home loan seekers who went into those honest, upright, good-natured Christian banker people and lied through their goddamn teeth and said, well, I have a job where I make 80 grand a year, and they really didn't. They had a job where they were making 40 grand, and that's how all this happened. That's what I heard. Did y'all hear anything different?
The lights are out, but I can't see. There's nobody home. Oh, no, there's nobody home. I love your smile, but when you talk, there's nobody home. I love it when you speak your mind. Nobody home. It's nice to have some quiet time. There's nobody home. The sign says there's no vacancy, but everything you say to me convinces me most certainly there's no.
The pow, 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 power of positive drinking. The pow, 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 power of positive. The pow, 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 power of positive. The pow, pow,
I think actually the spending in the war might help with jobs, because we're buying equipment and people are working. I think this economy is down because we built too many houses.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, what's wrong? War is good for the economy. You know, we got to buy things, and we built too many houses.
Yeah, I want to know what happened. Remember when he said that Wall Street got drunk? The problem was Wall Street got drunk. Of course, he would know. Well, my question is, if Wall Street got drunk, why didn't you take away the bottle?
Yeah, really.
Why'd you give him the bottle?
That's the truth. Get this. John McCain spent $5,000 for a celebrity makeup artist. This is from RawStory.com. It's not cheap to get McCain's 72-year-old face ready for prime time. The celebrity gossips at U.S. Weekly report the Republican presidential candidate has spent more than $5,500 for a makeup artist better known for her work in Hollywood. Now, why do you give a damn about this? Because McCain, whose ads go after Barack Obama for his celebrity status, right? Celebrity status. That's, you know, to Republicans, that means if people know you outside your church, then you're a celebrity, I guess. But here's McCain, according to Us Weekly. Did I say U.S. Weekly? I meant Us Weekly. McCain spends thousands of dollars for a makeup artist, Tiffany White, who has worked on So You Think You Can Dance and American Idol. McCain paid the beauty school grad $5,583.43 for her services, according to the Federal Election Commission. Miss White did McCain's makeup before a televised forum at the Saddleback Church last month and before an unknown number of additional appearances. A McCain spokesman wouldn't comment when asked about the makeup services. Well, you got to go on CNN. Every time I go on CNN, they take me into the little room back there with the makeup people, and they just look and they go, Jesus Christ, there's nothing we can do here, and just send me out, you know. No, they put powder. That's how, just, there you go, Mr. Malloy. From Prairie 2, Mike, the stock market sputtered along again today. The people smart enough to sell are long gone. The neocons said there was no need for a manufacturing base in the U.S. They would create better jobs. Well, now all the investment bankers are out of work, too. Any day, the Chinese are going to stop giving us credit, and we will need to create 10 million manufacturing jobs. These aren't the kind of manufacturing jobs like those provided by the Bush crime family, where all you need is a spatula and some greasy hamburger meat. We need to replace trillions of dollars worth of equipment that was sold off to China for pennies on the dollar to make people like Mitt Romney rich. This would be much harder to do today than in the 30s, when the factories and equipment were still in place and all FDR had to do was put money back into circulation. It can be done, but the neocons and transnational corporations will oppose this at every turn. The argument that it's automatically in the interest of China and the rest of the world to help because they're dependent on us is just, well, Prairie 2 says hubris. I would say something else. But anyway, in closing, Prairie 2 writes, we may have to learn to live without all the crap we buy at Walmart for a long time. Crap like pharmaceuticals and baby clothes. We're in much worse shape than it appears on the surface. Even living under a bridge isn't such a good idea anymore since they are all falling down. The Republicans have been hollowing us out for 30 years. It could take just as long to come back. But it's not like we have any choice. It's fight our way back or don't ever come back and accept a permanent third world way of life. Yeah! We're in a mell of a hess here, aren't we? Huh? We really are. We're in the... I got an email the other night. Somebody said, why not hire a forensic accountant to find out where did the money go? What? Wait a minute. All of a sudden, there's no money. What happened? I remember when the Clinton administration ended, say what you will, and I've said it many times, but the best Republican, Bill Clinton, in the history, in modern political history, left the Bush crime family with a projected, what, $6 or $7 trillion budget surplus over the next 10 years. What happened? Plus, left the 2001 fiscal year budget in the black. So what happened? Where did the money go?
Well, how many trillions are missing just in Iraq?
Well, I think hundreds of billions.
And, well, okay, how many hundreds of billions are missing in Iraq? And then there's the massive, useless Department of Homeland Security.
Well,
that was expensive. And can anybody tell me what they do? Do they do anything?
It's a jobs program for people who otherwise would be working at a Ford assembly plant, but there are no longer any Ford assembly plants working. Okay, one or two. So that's who works at Homeland Security. I guess, I don't know. First things first, says the subject line. This is from Bill. We have a lot of bills. Bill writes, before we even talk about a bailout for Wall Street, the Bush regime, all of them must resign. Let's install a caretaker government until January when a new elected government can take charge. In any parliamentary democracy in the world, the Bush regime would have been forced to resign 2 years ago, and we could have avoided some of this mess. Bill. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I've walked and I crawled on six crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of seven side forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain you're gonna fall.
Tax cuts matter. If somebody builds a new building, somebody's got to come and build the building. And when the building expanded, it prevented additional opportunities for people to work, new opportunity employment.
All right, we have a little piece of audio here we want you to hear. This is Dana Bash breaking into the Situation Room on the CNN late this afternoon. I think this was around 6:30 Eastern Time. Dana Bash, this is after this cowardly little piglet, John McCain, decides that he can't face a debate with Obama, which absolutely makes sense. But anyway, Dana Bash breaks in here with a news flash for...
I just spoke with Senator Lindsey Graham. He is in the McCain campaign. He is negotiating or trying to negotiate with the Obama campaign and the Presidential Debate Commission. What they are saying, what he is saying, is that they are proposing to, instead of having next Thursday the vice presidential debate in St. Louis, to make that the presidential debate and then to delay the VP debate to another time. That is what they're proposing. They understand very well that both the Obama campaign and the debate commission, they have no intention of delaying Friday's debate. But both he and a senior advisor told me that if there is no bailout deal by Friday, that McCain has no intention of going to the debate.
Oh, my God. What's the matter? The lipstick pig woman wouldn't be able to hold her own against big bad Biden? Oh, my God. Yeah, let's cancel everything. Oh, we're just kidding. Oh, why don't you asses go home? Sarah, go back to Alaska. Shoot a moose. John, get out of town. Go play senator. Jesus Christ, will these people go away? Let's cancel. Oh, yeah. Well, this crisis, we got to work on this crisis. Oh, yeah. I got to get up there and work on the crisis. McCain can do nothing. He's not the Senate majority leader. He's one of 100. He will take his turn. You sit down. Shut up, you old fart, until you get your chance. Till you can go to the well of the Senate and say something. And that is depends on the schedule of that. Well, what does this guy think he's going to? Oh, well, my friends, they need me. I've got to go back and solve everything, my friends. give me a break.
Well, plus, it's worse than that. He's already virtually asserted that he's going to rubber stamp whatever Bush wants anyway, so it's useless. I mean, he's pointless up there. He doesn't have any fresh ideas. Why doesn't he just...
Paul says, Paul emails in, I have an idea, Uncle Mike. In light of McCain's no-show to this Friday's debates, let's invite Ralph Nader, Cynthia McKinney, Bob Barr, and all these other small party presidential candidates to debate Barack Obama. What do you think? Oh, I think it'd be a great idea. But it doesn't matter what you think, Paul. It doesn't matter what I think. These things are already decided, my friend. All right, McCrazy wants to suspend his campaign so he can focus on solving the economic crisis and lead his congressional colleagues to pass the Bush $1 trillion handout, right? And that's what this is all about, right? This from a man who 10 days ago said he believed the economy was fundamentally strong and that Sarah Palin was an economic expert because she knows how to sell stuff on eBay. So G.I. John explains that it's the American thing to do to stop campaigning and concentrate on this bailout bill. Well, why stop there, John? If it's patriotic to suspend the debate, wouldn't it be super American just to cancel your campaign entirely? You are a jackass. You are a freak. Your running mate, the pig lady, the lipstick pig woman, couldn't find Alaska unless somebody pointed out to her. Or is that Russia? Why don't you give up now since you're obviously, you're going to lose. Isn't that really what's best for America? Huh? And now McCain wants to call up the VP debates next week, too. Mm-hmm. When the going gets tough, you know the rest of that, right? McCain's solution, cut and run. Can you imagine that plan of action if McCain were elected? At the first crisis, what will McCain and Palin do? Just call off the presidency? Huh? Suggestion, McCain, get over it, quit now, go back to one of your houses with the lizard woman.
Morning. I met with a group of economic advisors to talk about the proposal on the table and the steps that we should take going forward.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I've also spoken with members of Congress to hear their perspective.
Oh.
It has become clear that no consensus has developed to support the administration's proposal.
Well, gosh darn it.
I do not believe that the plan on the table will pass as it currently stands. And we are running out of time.
Drum roll right here.
Tomorrow morning, I'll suspend my campaign and return to Washington after speaking at the Clinton Global Initiative.
The what?
I've spoken to Senator Obama and informed him of my decision. And I've asked him to join me.
You rat bastard.
I'm calling on the president to convene a leadership meeting from both houses of Congress, including Senator Obama and myself. It's time for both parties to come together to solve this problem.
Have you met my wife?
We must meet as Americans, not as Democrats or Republicans.
Or Russians.
And we must meet until this crisis is resolved. I'm directing my campaign to work with the Obama campaign and the Commission on Presidential Debates to delay Friday night's debate.
Keating 5.
Until we have taken action to address this crisis.
Keating 5. Keating 5. Here's a crazy idea, you Keating 5 freak. Why not just switch the debate to focus strictly on the economy? Let's hear what you got to say, Lumpy. Come on. Oh, never mind. You don't know anything about the economy. Christ, you don't know how to send an email. Okay, so in other words, McCain is firmly behind the Bush bailout plan, perfectly aligned with his disastrous economic policies, yada, 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 yada. He says it has become clear that no consensus has developed to support the administration's proposal. Well, I'll be damned. You know what he leaves? This is what really pisses me off. Obama and McCain did have a conversation on the phone today. At the end of that conversation, they agreed to make a joint announcement later on in the day, after they had a chance to talk again. I've almost got Obama down. So rather than wait for that second phone call and to put together a joint statement, Lumpy goes out and says what he says. I've spoken to Senator Obama and informed him of my decision, and I've asked him to join me. Oh, my God. That's not how it went down. Well, you know, why be surprised? McCain is a sneak, he's a liar, and he's a coward. He's going to speak at the Clinton Global Initiative. What the hell is that? Look, why don't you go back to the Senate, McCain, and give America a break. Do the patriotic thing. Fall on your sword, metaphorically speaking. Just get the lipstick pig woman up there tomorrow and hold a press conference and say, in the best interest of the country, you've come to the realization that there's not a thing you can do, and you're going to get out. Now, Barack Obama explains logically and sanely exactly why the debates are so crucial for Americans right now. We need to hear what the candidates would do as president to work on a solution. We already know where they stand as legislators, but now is the time to look at the future, not rehash the past.
It's my belief that this is exactly the time when the American people need to hear from the person who, in approximately 40 days, will be responsible for dealing with this mess.
Makes sense.
And I think that it is going to be part of the president's job to deal with more than one thing at once.
Gee,
I think there's no reason why we can't be constructive in helping to solve this problem and also tell the American people what we believe and where we stand and where we want to take the country. So in my mind, actually, it's more important than ever that we present ourselves to the American people and try to describe where we want to take the country and where we want to take the economy, as well as dealing with some of the issues of foreign policy that were initially the subject of the debate.
You know what I'm hoping? This is what I'm hoping. And I have to say hoping because I don't pray. But this is what I'm hoping. I am hoping the debate commission, whatever the hell it's called, has made it perfectly clear they're not calling off this debate in, for God's sake, Mississippi. You know, Barack Obama gets 50 points for just showing up down there. So here's what I hope. I hope McCain doesn't show. I hope. If McCain, because Barack Obama will be there. And isn't it amazing? The first thing out of McCain's lumpy mouth is cut and run. Oh, well, I'm not prepared. I won't have notes. I won't have Lieberman next to me. Friday, oh, my God, Friday night, that's Shabbos. He won't be there to whisper in my ear. Oh, my God. And he can't even whisper in the little earpiece because, you know, he'll be in church davening and doing and stuff. And, oy, what am I going to do? I know. Let's call it off. Because why? Because I gotta get to, D.C. and, And then the damn thing breaks. And Obama's standing there looking, and there's a McCain doll with springs sprung, and You know, Lieberman comes rushing on stage. I know it's Sabbath. I tried to tell Hadassah, but I got to fix this guy. Oh, man.
And X don't equal Y, but my homework is bound to multiply. Math sucks.
Say either, and I say either. You say neither, and I say neither. Either, either, neither, neither. Let's call the whole thing off. You like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, and I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato.
You're working hard to put food on your family.
But oh, if we call the whole thing off, then we must part. And oh, if we ever part, then that might break my heart. So if you like pajamas and I like pajamas, I'll wear pajamas and give up pajamas. So we know we better call the calling off.
Fred Astaire, huh? 10 before the hour. What else we got here? Who wrote this? M in L.A. writes, about Wolf Blitzer. Wolf Blitzer frames the McCain campaign's suspension of the debate as if it was the Wall Street issue that forced McCain into it. Classic Wolf Blitzer to protect John McCain. Blitzer has never forgiven 4th Army PSYOPs Fort Bragg for leaving CNN headquarters in Atlanta. All right, David Letterman, is this from when, tonight? Last night. Okay, there's a real good nine-minute segment out there from tonight that you'll hear if you tune into Letterman for his opening monologue at 11:30 Eastern Time tonight. But we've already heard it because it's already on YouTube, a nine-minute segment where he just rips John McCain a new body orifice. But this is from last night, top 10 reasons to what? Oh, Bush doing what? Saving the economy. Top 10 reasons why Bush will or won't save the economy. Bush's top 10 ideas on saving the economy.
Top 10 George W. Bush ideas for fixing the economy. Here we go, number 10. Why fix it if it ain't broke? Thank you, George. And number 9, drill Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for loose change. What? Number 8, sell cupcakes in front of the White House. Good idea. Number 7, flip all them charts upside down. Excellent. Excellent. Number 6, encourage Americans to spend more if they don't, Cheney peppers them in the face. Number 5, most things seem better after a half bottle of Jim Beam. Number 4. Let's just say the Lincoln Memorial is now the Tostitos Lincoln Memorial. That ain't a bad idea. We make some dough that way. And number 3, invent a car that runs on root beer. Come on, we have an unlimited supply of root beer, and we make it here in America. Am I the only one thinking?
Ah, it down.
Am I? Number 2, put on a pair of glasses and shoot a moose. What? What is that going to do? And the number 1 George W. Bush idea for fixing the economy, is Hillary still available for a 3 a.m. phone call? There you go.
Well, you have permission to leave my program at 11:35 Eastern Time tonight, whenever it plays in your time zone, and listen to the 9-minute long monologue that it is devastating. Or you can right now go to YouTube and McCain. Letterman on McCain, but put in today's date. What's the date today? 24th? 9/24. If this is a good idea, the job of the vice president is to stand in for the president when needed, right? How better for Palin to appear presidential than to act on his behalf this Friday night? Yeah, let McCain go to the Senate and solve stuff, and let McCain, let Palin show up out there to stand in for the president, and we'll see what she's made of besides lipstick and pig offal. Yes.
Well, maybe we could get that spooky African preacher to stand behind her from her home church.
Oh, the one that laid hands on her to protect her from haints and
get her breath.
Witches. Oh,
witchcraft.
My God.
Witchcraft. To keep the witches away.
Yeah, I just saw that video today or this evening. If you've not seen that, are we going to post that? Let's put a link to that up at our website.
If I can find it, I'll put it on there. I've never seen anything like that. She's standing there, eyes downcast, palms to the sky to Jesus.
Right, right. Well,
accepting a blessing from this guy.
Well, three men are standing around her. One is a preacher of some sort from one of these fundamentalist screamer churches, these snake handling churches. And this guy is from some country in Africa. So, and he's doing the praying. And the other two preachers are like holding her hands, and oh my God, you ought to hear what they're saying. And there's Palin standing there, and this preacher from Africa is calling down Jesus to protect Sarah from witches. Oh, is this madness never going to stop? I mean, this has gotten so out of hand. It's gotten so out of hand. When we come back after the top of the hour break here, we're going to have some of the stuff Naomi Klein said today on the Amy Goodman program. I think it was today. Very, very straightforward and to the point. Sally in Minneapolis writes, so the financial crisis that has plagued lower middle class families for years now has begun to seriously impact the upper class. And now that wealthy campaign contributors are affected, a relief plan is in the works, one which inherently protects financial institutions and their shareholders, with relief for working-class families being, negotiated. The irony here, Sally writes, is that relief for lower and middle-class families would have, in essence, prevented this crisis. But the voices of the many, the poor, the moderate, the typical, surely lack the amplification of the few, the rich, the connected, the vested, the few who have controlled Washington for too long. The latest example, billionaire Warren Buffett purchasing assets that most benefit from bailout and then calling for a bailout, even threatening the very well-being of our nation and society should the bailout fail to pass. We are told to heed his expertise. Buffett, you see, is a brilliant business leader. Do not be fooled. This is not your rescue package. Let us save our prayers that relief trickles down. Thanks, Sally. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on Nova M. Naomi Klein was on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Program. I think this was from today. And we quoted from she had a piece at Huffington Post the other day that we quoted from, titled "Now is the Time to Resist Wall Street Shock Doctrine." And I want to share this with you. Amy Goodman said, "Can you explain that? What do you mean by that?" And Klein says, "Well, the thesis of my book, what I mean by the shock doctrine, is that
It is in times of crisis. It is in times when people are panicked. When we've seen again and again the right push through radical pro-corporate policies, what they call free market reforms, precisely because it is in a crisis where the space for debate rapidly closes. And you can evoke this state of emergency to say, we have no choice! And I think we're seeing a very dramatic example of this tactic, Naomi Klein says, right now, with this really extortionist kind of tactic playing out in Washington. You know, sign this blank check, or we're all going down, or Main Street's going down, or taxpayers, you know, the sky will fall on them. I'm also arguing, Klein says, that this is only stage one of the shock doctrine. They're getting this, they're lobbying for this huge bailout, obviously, but this bailout is a kind of time bomb because it's all these bad debts and they're going to explode on the next administration. I mean, we know that the Bush administration has already left the next administration with huge debt and deficit problems. They've just exploded those, expanded them. And what that means is that whoever the next president is going to be inheriting this economic crisis that is being exacerbated by this bailout. So in the case of McCain, I think, if he's the president, then I think we know what he'll do. Because we know he wants to privatize Social Security, which is something that Wall Street has been waiting for a long time, another bubble. We know he has said in the first 100 days of his administration, he'll look at every program and either reform it or shut it down. This is really a recipe for economic shock therapy. So while you have all these trivial issues being discussed in the election season, I think what we're really under the surface, they're actually being quite clear. They're going to take, if they take power, it will be in the midst of an economic emergency. They'll invoke that emergency to push through very, very radical changes. So, you know what I've been saying is, this is not four more years of Bush. It's much, much worse in the case of another Republican administration. But there's huge problems for Democrats as well if they win this election because, you know, we need to only think back to the situation in which Clinton took power, where he ran an election on an economic populist platform promising to renegotiate NAFTA. Then there was an economic crisis. Clinton came under intense lobbying by people like Robert Rubin, who's also advising Obama right now. And by the time Clinton, took office, he had embraced economic austerity. So people need to understand these tactics, need to put pressure on the candidates, the parties, and reject this tactic. And I've actually been really heartened, Amy, that people are onto these shock tactics and aren't falling for it. And, you know, to the extent that we're seeing a little bit of spine from the Democrats, it is only, as Chris Dodd said, because they are hearing it from their constituents. So people need to keep up this pressure right now. That's Naomi Klein on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Today. We will post the link to the entire interview, and both the audio and the Rush transcript. So take a look at that. If it's not up at our website now, it'll be up by the time the program's over. What else we got here? Again, an awful lot of emails from people who want to make a point here. There's no way in hell we ever get to all the phone calls. Jamie writes, Mike, I'm wondering if this latest stunt by McCain, in response to Congress's failure to lay down immediately and completely before Paulson and the administration regarding the $1 trillion blank check, if this latest stunt by McCain is the beginning of the unraveling and suspension of the entire campaign and election, as so many have warned and foreshadowed with justification, is martial law long to follow? Perhaps you could offer your thoughts on this tonight, Jamie. You know, I don't know what the ultimate plan is. I do know with these pigs, there is always an ultimate plan. Now, as far as Republicans in general are concerned, Republican office holders, their goal for the past 70 years has been to undo the New Deal. All those programs put together by the Roosevelt administration, most pointedly the ones that guaranteed oversight, control, regulation, and targeted towards the market, targeted towards polluters, targeted toward, you know, just oversight. You can't have a society that runs on rules and regulations that are made up on the fly, especially when you claim that the underpinning economic system is free market, free enterprise. Free market capitalism is what I'm trying to say, because as we've discussed on this program, free market capitalism, left to its own, devours everything in its path. It murders everything. It just eats everything. And free market capitalism guarantees two classes of people, the working class and the ultra-rich. It also has a permanently unemployed class, but I don't know, you know, what you would call that. So the effort has been ongoing for 70, 80 years to undo everything that has been done that has helped this country. Everything. As far as an overarching plan now, like bring all of this economic crisis to a head now so that the election can be stopped, I can't quite go there yet. I really can't. I don't. There was a time a couple of years ago when I thought the ultimate goal of these murderous rat bastards was to prevent any 08 election. But I'm having trouble. You know, the tinfoil hat doesn't fit as well as it did. Doesn't fit as well now as it did a couple of years ago. You know, my head is too chock-a-block with trying to figure out what really happened on 9/11 2001. However, there are in place enough presidential directives and enough laws enacted by Congress to absolutely stop the 2008 election. All Bush has to do is declare this financial emergency. If the House and the Senate don't come to some kind of an agreement to give these rapacious capitalistic pigs, my God, I sound like a Russian. I sound like a communist from the 50s. To give these rapacious communist or capitalist pigs all their money, if they don't get that, then sure, I could very easily see Bush being told to invoke Directive 51, declare a state of emergency, suspend everything, put into effect martial law conducted by the so-called Northern Command, which is the United States is now a potential theater of conflict that is being overseen by the U.S. military. So could it happen? Sure it could happen. With this gang, anything can happen. Anything. And anything usually does. And none of it has been good. Again, I'll make the challenge to any one of you creepy right-wingers out there who listen to this program, any of you, to call in and tell me one thing that the Bush administration has done, just one thing, to the benefit of this nation. One thing. And you can't do it because they have done nothing but tear down and destroy and undermine and subvert. That's all they've done for almost 8 years. So is there an overarching plan here? There could very well be. There could very well be.
I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your skies. Welcome to the new American century.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Okay, the number here is 800-989-1480. Let's do some calls. AJ, the Music Factory, is calling from the Catskills. Hey, AJ.
Hey, handsome. How are you tonight? That's okay. Don't worry. I didn't mean to rile you. I didn't want to confuse you.
Okay.
Well, you know, there were. I was riveted to the day's development, and as it sunk in, there were two things that caught me about this McCain story. One was that I now definitely believe that they could steal the election or institute martial law, whatever they need to do. Now, I know that that's not big news to, you know, in terms of this show and anybody who listens to it. But the thing is that I've been listening to that idea for years.
Well, what made you come to that conclusion today?
Because the idea that he would be brazen enough to manipulate a public forum like this for his own gain tells me that they'll do anything.
Yeah, okay.
This one is small potatoes compared to what they could do. But, you know, for years I've listened to the concept and I've sort of intellectually accepted it, but I never really let it in.
Right.
And today I saw firsthand, I really believe that he doesn't honor anything about the system. He just feels that, you know, if it suits him, he'll turn this way or that way.
Right.
The other thing that struck me, everybody was talking about, was it a political move or not? Of course it was, but that was part of the ongoing debate today, and people were asking, was it a smart move or was it a dumb move or would Obama blink or all these, you know, ancillary questions. The thing that glared at me was that it was impetuous. Now, he himself has said that I make these decisions quickly and I don't think about the consequences. I just live with the consequences.
Yeah.
And what scared me is, my God, what if this guy were president and he made a decision on the spur of the moment like that, a dumb one?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could make a spur of the moment decision the right way, too. You know, a broken clock is right twice a day. But Jesus, the fact that he just says without thinking.
Yeah, he does. And
it was a profoundly stupid. And, you know, did he let his advisors in on this? Or I can't believe his advisors are as stupid as he is.
Well, actually, no. Now there's a thing floating out on the web, and I don't have it right in front of me now, so I can't give the website. His campaign had put together a memo, talking points about why McCain was calling for suspension of these debates this Friday.
Yeah.
And if I can relocate it, I will post it at my website tonight and you can take a look at it. So
that'd
no,
be great.
This was carefully thought out. The McCain campaign understands a couple of things. First of all, if you've been noticing, AJ, any of the video where McCain is speaking, I don't care if it's one of these phony ass town hall meetings or just at a public gathering, he can't speak or extemporaneously. He's got to have those notes. He keeps looking down and reading. And they're not notes. I mean, he actually reads this stuff. See?
Yep.
Every single line has to be out there. What the hell is he going to do in a debate with Barack Obama?
Yeah, and listen, he also, this is, again, here we go again. If it hasn't been enough of this for the last 8 years, he fumbles a lot. He misspeaks.
Right, he
and
does.
And he has a very Bushian laugh when he does that. He does this creepy little uncomfortable laugh, and nobody's drawing attention to it. There it is, staring at us right in the face, and nobody's drawing attention to it.
Well, this was the function that his minder, Senator Lieberman, fulfilled. If you notice, during the campaign season or the primary season, every place McCain was, there was Lieberman. I don't care if it was in Detroit or downtown Baghdad. There was Lieberman right at his shoulder, like some kind of an incubus or something sitting on his attached to his rib cage, whispering stuff into his ear. It was the creepiest damn thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
And Lieberman, since Friday night is the Sabbath, of course Lieberman can't show up. But
you know, one quick thing before I go, I listened to Schumer, one of our senators here in New York, who always makes me vomit because he cannot. He's an equivocator. You ask him a question, and he never answers the damn question.
Right, right, right.
But today they asked him about this move of McCain's, and my God, without any reservation and no flowery words at all, he looked into the camera and said, "It's just weird."
Yeah, well,
and he nailed it, man. He nailed it.
Well, if anything, it's weird. AJ, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malone.
It's about 25 before the hour. George in Alhambra, California has a solution. The only bailout plan that makes sense, he says. Mike, Mr. Paulson, Mr. Bernanke claim that the credit crisis is at the breaking point. Banks have no money to lend. Here's a no-risk solution that takes the taxpayer off the hook. If federal relief is truly needed, then the only solution is to wipe out all of the credit card debt in America. According to the Center for American Progress, as of April 2008, the total credit card debt in America is $950 billion. It's simple. Uncle Sam sends $950 billion to the banks holding credit card debt, and the credit crisis is over. They will have plenty of money to lend. Upon receiving the federal funds, the banks credit or zero out all credit card balances. As a result, Americans across the country will be freed from this debt that is certainly having a negative effect on the economy. The end result, the banks have money to lend, the people have money to spend. Sounds like a bailout plan we could all use. Here's a chance for government to work for the people. Mr. Paulson, the problem is solved. Well, yeah, but what's to stop people from just charging up another $950 billion? I guess that doesn't really matter. Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling from Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, hey, Mike. Sorry, I was a little distracted. Good to speak with you, man. It really is.
My pleasure.
You know, I've been trying for the last year or so to suppress the part of my brain that develops these conspiracy theories, but I think I've finally had to give in to one. And the only reason I'm doing that is I really think that the Bush administration has come to the realization that John McCain is an idiot and cannot win the election. Therefore, I really think their plan. Well, they had a two-system plan. They were either going to steal the election if it looked like it was going to be close,
mm-hmm.
or suspend the election. I think now they've realized, especially today, there's a nine-point lead in the latest poll for Obama.
Yeah.
So my thinking is, well, they're not going to be able to steal this one, and they realize that, and they know John McCain's an idiot, and everybody else is figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can't steal it, let's go ahead and suspend it. And I know there's been some other rumors out there on the internet about a letter that was sent, I believe, from our Treasury Department to the Bank of England. I don't know if you've heard anything about this.
You know, I did. I glanced at this, but I don't know the gist of it. I know what you're referring to. Can you put it in two sentences?
Yeah, basically a letter went out saying that to the Bank of England, saying that on October 5th, George Bush was going to declare an economic emergency and suspend indefinitely the November elections.
Really? Is it?
Yeah.
Well, now, do you believe that?
Well, I don't want to. I really don't want to, Mike. But like I said, especially given the fact that Barack Obama and Joe Biden have already somewhat alluded to the fact that if they get into office, they may, perhaps, there's a slight chance, do some investigation into the crimes of the Bush family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I was Bush and Cheney especially, that would tend to make me a little bit nervous. So why not go ahead, everybody else in the country has done it at one point or another, is go ahead and just make himself ruler for life, or at least until he can find someone else to pass the torch to that won't come hunting him down.
All right, now, let me ask you, let's supposing that scenario would play out the way you've laid it out.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the American people will do?
Well, I think if there's any suspension of the election, we'll have civil unrest in this country like we haven't seen since the 1700s. And that makes me worry. You know, mm-hmm. people don't want to invest in anything right now. I think the best investment you can make, which I've been making for the last year, is in Smith & Wesson, so and bottled water, because I really, really am scared of this country. Something is on the horizon. You know, there's nothing better in the world than your gut feeling.
Yeah, that's true.
To keep you safe, and I've had this gut feeling for at least 2 years now, and today just solidified the whole deal. And if I could real quickly make
sure.
a comment
sure.
about what Bernanke is doing, the way I see it is he's holding us hostage. He has told, in essence, the government that if you do not give me this blank check for $700 million with no questions, no oversight, there's already a list of 100 banks that are going to fail. And I think what he's saying is if you don't give me this money, there's going to be a run on the banks. And we all know that. That's what caused the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. Everybody was the run on the banks.
Well, essentially, that's what Bush said tonight. Only he made it sound even worse. You know, Bush looked like a deer in the headlights tonight, staring into the camera, no animation whatsoever, laying out a scenario of pure fear and loathing. This is what's going to happen, Bush said, if you don't give my administration this blank check, the $700 billion or whatever the hell it is. The number is totally irrelevant to what they're trying to do. It's immaterial. But, you know, the fear upon fear upon fear. Did you hear the list of things? I don't know if you heard his speech, but the list of things that he said were going to happen.
Well, yeah, Mike, I heard fear, terror.
Oh, my God.
Fear, terror. And you know, this if this gets pulled off, Mike, this will be, in essence, the biggest heist
yeah.
ever in the world, the biggest heist of hard workers' money
yeah.
going from the bottom to the very, very top. And let's remember, the Federal Reserve is owned by, what, a handful of world banks that own the Federal Reserve, and people think it's the federal government. Let's not forget, this is not the federal government.
Right.
This is the Federal Reserve. So, in essence, they're wanting to transfer $700 billion to the hands of a few, Mike, the hands of a few. And that can't be a good thing for them to own a majority of America's, what they say is assets, not really assets, but liabilities.
Liabilities,
all this
yeah.
money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mike, I like your idea of investing in Smith & Wesson, and thanks a lot for checking in, okay? Take care. Yeah, all right, take care, Mike. Rob is calling from Mount Iron, Minnesota. Is that right, Rob?
Mr. Malloy?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, tonight you caught me only on my second cocktail, you know? I got something that's where the last 2 days I listened to Bloomberg Radio.
Yeah.
For 10 or 15 hours.
Yeah.
The Senate hearings.
Uh-huh.
Congressional hearings.
Right.
Everything's going down out there, and not too many people get to be able to do that. You know, thank God for Sirius Radio.
That's right.
Never thought, you know, stupid truck driver would ever get interested in something like this. Bernanke and Paulson dodging all of the bullets that most of these senators and congressmen were throwing at them.
Right.
Over and over and over. But there was one person out there that came up with a really good idea, and I thought it was, something, I mean, I'm from Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
Amy Klobuchar's from Minnesota.
Right.
And she finally came down and said to both of them, why pay off old debt with new money? Why not create new credit with new money?
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense to you?
You talk about a dumb truck driver. I'm a dumb radio talk show host. I have, Rob, I don't have a clue as what to do here. It's all interlocking. I do know this, the financial system in this country has been polluted and corrupt for at least the last 25 years. And the people a lot older than me are snickering right now saying, oh, Malloy, it's been corrupt since forever. But the only corruption I am really intimately familiar with is the corruption of the past 25 years. The ending in 1999, I think it was, of the Glass-Steagall Act, I believe it was, that kept a firewall between banks, regular banks and investment banks, that Clinton signed. It was engineered by Republicans, but Clinton signed it. That was kind of the final nail in the coffin of the American monetary or financial system. So I know that, but I don't understand this.
There's the one point I'm trying to make here is where, $700 billion, if you went to $750 billion, we've got 150 million workers in America, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so fine. From 150 million... to go to $750 billion, that means each person that works in America has to be able to donate $5,000 to this system or this new thing that they're coming up with. $5,000.
Yeah.
Now the next thing is where should we pay off these people that created all these, what do they call them, illiquid assets?
Yeah.
Let's go back the other way. How about let's go down to the bottom and if these people at the bottom need some money, let's use that money to be able to take care of them,
Yeah, I hear you. Rob, listen.
No, I got a little rant out here. Can you give me 30 seconds?
30, yeah. Go ahead, quick.
Okay. You're 72 years old, Mike, right?
Me?
No, imagine you're 72 years old.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, you got 7 houses.
Yeah.
You got 13 cars.
Right.
If you quit your job right now, you've guaranteed $5,000 a week for the rest of your life.
Right.
You've got a mate worth $100 million. No insult, Kathy, please. Would you apply for a full-time job?
Would I? No. Not unless I were a former POW and was riddled with PTSD and power mad. Then I might do it. Rob, thank you. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Here come the woman, the look in her eye.
10 before the hour. 10 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Ben is calling from Elgin, Illinois. This is Ben Birch, our Nova M radio podcast manager, among other things. Hey, Ben.
Hey there, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. What's going on in the far north?
Oh, well, just... All the usual stuff going on here. We have our normal autumn in progress.
It was just a rhetorical question, Ben.
But reason I'm calling, a couple of points here.
Yeah.
Number one is I am not an economist, although I did take 400 level economics courses when I went to the University of Chicago.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh my God! Well, then you should be an economist.
Well, I should be, except I figured out something very very early on, and that is economists usually don't know what they're doing. You can make all kinds of pretty numbers. You can run regressions. You can do all the pretty statistics you want and make it all look like a science. but it's not.
All right.
Okay.
But, no argument for me on that one. Isn't it called the dismal trade, or is that the funeral business?
Both of them, I
both
think.
Both of them,
yeah,
okay.
The dismal science is what
dismal
it's called.
Dismal science, that's right.
Well, first of all, I don't think that this bailout, however big it is actually going to end the collapse, because the collapse is occurring for structural reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Any economy is only as strong as the actual stuff it produces. And right now, the only things of note that we produce in this country are agricultural mm-hmm. products and minerals.
Kind of like third world countries.
Well, second world anyway. It's a lot like Argentina.
Okay.
The issue here is, you know, when we had the first Great Depression, all the factories got shuttered and people got sent home.
Right.
But, you know, those factories were still there.
Yeah.
And the skilled workmen were still here.
Right.
And so when Roosevelt came in and restored sanity and started bringing the economy back to its feet, all they had to do was open the doors again,
mm-hmm.
buy raw materials, and get those guys working.
Right.
That can't happen now, because not only have we shut the factories, we've taken out all the machinery and sent it to China.
That's true.
Okay? Number two, if we go through with this bailout, first of all, don't let anyone tell you it's $700 billion. If you look at the other things we were probably going to be on the hook for in addition to this,
mm-hmm.
because remember, in for a dollar, in for a dime.
Right, right.
We every single person in this country is going to owe $26,000 towards the debt.
Is that what it is?
Well, yeah, because yeah. right now the federal debt is $9.8 trillion. If we add what I think this bailout's going to cost, which is $1.8 trillion,
uh-huh.
We come up with $11.4 trillion. Divide that by 330 million, and you get $26,000 and change. And that's what each and every one of I know I have that in my pocket right now.
Oh, so. Yeah, me too. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not going to solve a thing. It's going to put us into debt even further. And oh, by the way, that debt has doubled
mm-hmm.
since Bush took office.
Mm-hmm.
Doubled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that $26,000, like $14,000 of that you can lay at the feet of George Bush, and the remaining $12,000 took since 1776
to accumulate. Yeah, yeah.
All right? And the other thing is, I really think the reason for this bailout, now, is not to stop the collapse, because I think that the powers that be know that you're not going to do that. It is just to make it look like the Republican Party is taking responsible actions towards the economy for the next 60 days.
But there are so many key Republicans who are absolutely adamant, or is that all an act against this idea?
No, I think for some of them it's not an act. You know, you sometimes you can push people, you know, out of their comfort zone and get them to do things they don't like, you know, and get them to act in ways, for example, for Republicans that are not fiscally conservative.
Mm-hmm.
But when you push hard enough, I think, you know, you wind up with, you know. Mr. Smith goes to Washington sorts of things.
Right, right.
Where people say, no, I'm not going to take it anymore. You can't push me. This is wrong. And I think we're seeing that pushback from the Republicans right now, whether they're going to stick by that and stick by their principles or not is a really excellent question. But the whole point behind pushing this thing right now and the way they are pushing it is just to get us to the election, is just to get us to get this issue off the table so that they have a chance of defeating Barack Obama.
All right, you have a minute. What do you see, before we have to break, what do you see as the ultimate outcome here?
The ultimate outcome is we're going to get something very much like this proposal coming through. It's going to have a million additions on it, and no one's going to really know what the actual effect of all that law is going to be until it's actually in place. I think that it will push the collapse off maybe 4 months, maybe 5 months. But after that, we're going to have a financial systems collapse in this country, and there's absolutely nothing that we can do about it other than accept that it's going to happen and build our way out of it.
Well.
Pretty grim.
Well, it's It's not exactly what I had in mind when I was a teenager and thought about, gee, how can I get out there and get a piece of the American pie? This is not exactly what I had in mind, Ben, but, what the hell, I guess I didn't plan my life right, eh?
Well, neither did I, otherwise I would be, you know, the chairman of the board at a big bank and take my golden parachute.
That's very true. Ben, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you, okay?
You take care. Bye-bye.
All right, Ben, appreciate it. Ben Birch, who is part of the crew here at Nova M Radio. I wish I were as smart and as insightful as some of the people who called this program or who work for this company. Of course, on the other hand, maybe it's a good thing I'm not, because I might be inclined to say, let me out of here. I'm going to stick around. Hey, I hope you stick around. All right, we have a break here. We'll be back. Stay with us for the final hour. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Weird times. We're coming back to your phone calls in just a second. I've got two quick emails here. This is from George. Mike, I know you know this, but we're just the help to the Bush crime family and the Wizards of Wall Street. We only exist to clean the toilets after they make the mess and to dump the debt on after they rape, rob, and murder the economy. That they had the audacity to even ask for this bailout is almost more than I can handle. Some of our representatives are actually starting to notice the "don't you dare bail these bastards out" mail and phone calls. They'll still probably roll over and screw us again, but it's worth trying to push them into sanity. I've called and emailed both of our senators and told them how I feel about this fiasco. There isn't enough tar and feathers for these miscreants. There is a silver lining. In a true disaster, the rich will be a good source of protein. You know, you're the second person tonight. Memphis Mary was the other one who talked about eating the rich. And from Liz in Miami, hi, Mike, I get it now. The brains that caused the crisis met with John McCain today and basically told him, Johnny boy, we own your ass now. Get it back to Washington and protect Wall Street's interests. McCain is just obeying his masters. From the front page of the Wall Street Journal Online, 25 September 2008. That would be, what, Thursday? It says, quote, another key event. A round table Wednesday morning with some of Wall Street's biggest names, financial titans, who told him that the financial crisis bill must be passed soon. One financial executive said, quote, we urged John to get all over it, that this is a national security crisis, end quote. The financial executives, who were informed only Tuesday that Senator McCain wanted to meet with them the next day, included Merrill Lynch CEO John Thain, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company Vice Chairman James Lee, and private equity fund owner Henry Kravis, end quote. So that's the, thank you, Liz, that's the reason that McCain decided that he had to rush back to Washington to help solve the crisis. Oh, Jesus, God. We have some other news. Let me just drop this in. Brian Ross at ABC reports that U.S. intelligence analysts are putting the final touches on a secret national intelligence estimate on Afghanistan that reportedly describes our situation there as grim, their word. But there are, quote, no plans to declassify, end quote, any of it before the election, according to one U.S. official familiar with the process. Officials say a draft of this classified NIE, representing the key judgments of the U.S. intelligence community's 17 agencies and departments, is being circulated in Washington, and a final coordination meeting of the agencies involved is scheduled in a few weeks. According to people who have been briefed, the NIE will paint a grim picture of the situation in Afghanistan 7 years after the U.S. invaded. A spokesman for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence said, quote, it is not the Office of the Director of National Intelligence policy to publicly comment on national intelligence products that may or may not be in production. Don't you just want to slap the hell out of people that talk that way? Huh? The finished secret NIA would be sent to the White House and other policymakers. Mike McConnell, the Director of National Intelligence, has made it his policy that such key judgments, quote, should not be declassified, end quote. Seth Jones, an expert on Afghanistan at the Rand Corporation think tank, called the situation in Afghanistan, quote, dire, end quote. Jones said, quote, we are now at a tipping point with about half of the country now penetrated by a range of Sunni militant groups, including the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. End quote. Jones said there is a growing concern that Dutch and Canadian forces in Afghanistan would soon be calling it quits. Jones added, quote, the U.S. military would then need 6, 8, maybe 10 brigades, but we just don't have that money. End quote. And last week, Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, told Congress, quote, we're running out of time, end quote, in Afghanistan. He also said, quote, I'm not convinced we're winning in Afghanistan, end quote. The limited number of U.S. and NATO troops in Afghanistan has been a recurring theme during the 2008 presidential election, and a dire assessment in a new national intelligence estimate could make the Bush administration's handling of the situation there a campaign issue in the final month of the campaign. So, the situation in Afghanistan is dire. The situation in Iraq is getting to the point where we are going to be forced out. We're going to be literally attacked by the army that we allegedly have rebuilt. And then there's this from Iraq. Three American soldiers were charged with murder today. Is this today? No, I guess this was last Wednesday. From the Associated Press, three American soldiers were charged with murder and the deaths of four Iraqis who were bound, blindfolded, shot in the head, and dumped in a Baghdad canal. Four other U.S. soldiers have already been charged with conspiracy in the deaths, which apparently came shortly after the Iraqis were captured in April 2007. The Iraqis were killed in retribution for casualties within the 1st Battalion, 18th Infantry Regiment, according to military prosecutors. The Army said that the four, and that lists their names and ages, are facing charges of premeditated murder, conspiracy to commit premeditated murder, and obstruction of justice. The allegations facing the men related to, quote, the deaths of several detainees who were captured as part of combat operations last year, end quote, the Army said earlier this year. The article that appeared in the Army Times goes on to say that there apparently was no reason to execute these four Iraqis except for the fact that the soldiers were pissed off. And I don't even have to get into the news from Pakistan. As you all know, the Pakistan Army is now firing on U.S. troops every time we cross their border. These are difficult times, aren't they? All right, back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Just want to point it out, Mike. You go back to last Thursday, the day when Congress was brought in and given the dire warnings and all.
Yeah.
That morning, at 8 o'clock in the morning, the World Bank had injected about $400 billion into the world markets. The U.S. injected $110 billion into our markets.
Uh-huh.
When 4 hours, at about 11:30, we were told the credit markets had frozen.
Where'd the money go, Joe?
Exactly. Where the hell did the money go? Now they want me to give $700 billion, and the same bastards are in charge. I mean, we need the Putin solution. You nationalize the banks, you take the crooks, and you put them in jail. That's how you straighten this thing out. Otherwise, we're toast. We're finished.
Yeah.
Take care, my man.
Thanks, Joe. That certainly is one possible solution. And, you know, I've talked about nationalizing transportation, energy, and health care. Nationalizing the banks would be another good one. Yeah, really. I mean, the time has come. Remember what the founders said. Here's a republic if you can keep it. And we didn't keep it. We allowed the money manipulators. We allowed the thugs and the criminals and the sons of bitches in corporate America. We were warned. We've been warned several times over the past 2.5 centuries, but we ignored it. So we've lost it. So let's move on. Let's move on from a republic to a form of democratic socialism with a parliamentary government. Don't you think?
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. One thing I've noticed, and I've mentioned this a couple of times over the past couple of weeks, is the anger in some of the emails that I've been getting. Some of you try, as I do sometimes, to disguise the anger behind irony or dark humor. But the anger is palpable. I mean, it leaps off the pages of these emails when I print them out, and in some instances it goes way beyond anger. It's into rage. And when I allow myself to think about the situation, I mean, really deeply as I can go with my limited understanding of what these bastards have done to us, I feel that same rage. It comes bubbling up. It scares me. I mean, I have not liked this crime family since they stole the election way back on December 12th, 2000. But everything they have done has been so rotten, so vile, so destructive, so targeted to ending this republic that I have developed just an almost insurmountable rage. And I do hope I get over it. I mean, I'm doing double workouts every day now just to deal with the stress that comes from being angry all the time. So I hope I can get over it and develop some other emotion, some other dominant emotion once this filthy crime family is removed from office. But all that to say, I see the rage in so many of these emails that come in, like the one I'm going to share with you. And I've got to, clean it up a little bit. Subject line is, "These punks are going to hang." It's from Carl, who writes, "The people who are demanding a mandatory payment of $10,000 per person in the U.S. need to have their heads removed from their bodies. We did not ask them to deregulate. We did not ask them to make horrible decisions regarding home loans. We did not ask them to play five-card stud with our future. F these people. We gave them 8 years of unfettered access to make all the big decisions. They effed it all up. I say we stick it to them and tell them to shove it where the sun doesn't shine. F these blanks. I will see them strung up from light posts before I pay for their F-ups out of my pocket. Carl. You know, it's like that. And that's almost mild compared to some that come in here. And I certainly understand, you know, when I read something like what Carl just wrote, it's not shocking. It's like, yeah, I hear you, Carl. Yeah, absolutely right. I hear you. That is going to be one more aspect of the negative legacy that these pigs have left. This is astonishing. We've had bad presidents before. But for the most part, a huge chunk, if not the majority of the American people, didn't hate the administration. I mean, hate it on a visceral level. Like possibly the majority of us do with this administration. 80% of the American people now say the country is headed in the wrong direction. Makes you wonder about the other 20%. I can see where 1% would say, no, everything's great. But this 19% that is encased in that 20% that say everything's fine, are you people insane? Well, they don't listen to this program, but they must be insane. They have to be crazy, just absolutely crazy. Predatory rat bastards who would eat their own children if they thought when they got down to the bones there might be some money buried in the marrow. Ooh. 80% of the people in this country think we're headed in the wrong direction. Of that 80%, I bet the majority hates this criminal enterprise that took over our country. And again, this all goes back to 12th December 2000, when the Supreme Court ordered that the vote counting in Florida should stop. This gang of outlaws knew that it was a done deal when immediately 10 million Americans didn't take to the streets and say, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, goddamn no. No, 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 no. Count the votes. But we didn't do that. We didn't do that. Now, I'm sick of blaming myself and the rest of the American population. I really am, even though the ultimate responsibility rests with us. I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. Because at some point, you know, we do put faith in our system. We do, no matter how bad things look, we say to ourselves, well, you know, it's got to work out. So on December 13th, when we all realized what had happened, I think a lot of us said, okay, this is bad. This is really bad. But the system will overcome this. Well, the system didn't. The system did not overcome anything. The Bush crime family got in here and wreaked havoc, destroyed what was left of the system, absolutely and utterly destroyed it. So, rage? I don't see how anyone who is sane can feel anything but some sort of rage. I don't mean you're consumed with it. I don't mean it's the emotion you feel from the moment you have your morning coffee to the moment you have your Metamucil. I guess I'm the only one that does that. I'm talking about rage that when you think about this, it pops up, like what Carl wrote. I understand, man. I completely understand. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I'm sure that Europe is a lovely place to visit. My wife would love to go there every single year. But they're just puppies.
Yep, 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 yep.
They need to stick their yips to big dogs over here. I will rule the world forever. I'm straight and white and male, American and free.
Condoleezza, check my pussy.
Bill O'Reilly, Diebold Systems, Mass Destruction, me!
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Okay, not a cure, but Certainly as good as a couple of Motrin, right? Back to your phone calls. Ron is calling from Austin, Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Ron.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment. I heard this on your show yesterday. It was Paulson speaking to the congressional committee about the urgency of the bailout. And he said something to the effect, I don't remember it exactly, that the system is broke or the system has failed. It's like the problem here is because of a broken system, not the
right.
Not these people that are trying to fleece America.
Yeah, isn't that irritating? Doesn't that just piss you off? I mean,
yeah.
It did me. It did me.
The economy is, some people think the economy is like the weather, that it just goes up and down, and that there's no, the economy is very well manipulated. How else would you financially plunder people like they do? It's very well manipulated, and that's basically, it's like, you're speeding down the highway with five people in your car, and when the cop finally gets to the window, you're all sitting in the back seat like, well, we don't know what happened. The car just ran off, you know.
Right.
That's all I had to say.
All right. Thanks, Ron. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. Barney is calling from Fredericksburg, Virginia, listening on Sirius. Hey, Barney.
Hey, Mike. How are you this evening?
I'm all right. How are you?
Mike, I have a solution to this complex issue. There are 400-plus billionaires in this country. Let's call on those guys to do their patriotic duty and give a couple billion each.
You're kidding.
Get this started.
You're kidding, of course.
Oh, my God. Dead serious. I mean, ask the
super wealthy to do anything other than continue to accumulate their wealth.
They're asking us to be patriotic, so I'm asking them to do the same.
No, it doesn't work that way. You and I, Barney, you and I have to be patriotic. You and I have to pay our taxes. You and I have to make contributions to things that we want to see continue, but not those people. They exist someplace that you and I, we can't even smell it. It's so far above our heads.
Well, that's my answer for them. If they, you know, I don't mind being patriotic, but I'd like for them to do the same, Mike. And
I hear you. Makes sense to me. Thanks, Barney.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care. Yeah. The who was said patriotism is the last refuge of scoundrels, or something of that sort. Was that Mencken? I don't even know. Twain. And I probably have the quote wrong, but. Asking people, the uber wealthy, to give something back. Now, in some instances, that's not, you know, of course they do. Like Gates, I know a lot of people think that Microsoft's Mr. Gates is nothing but a freak and a monster and yada yada. But the Gates Foundation, I think, just my opinion, is doing an awful lot of good. So some of the ultra-wealthy do give back. Is he giving back enough? No, obviously not. I mean, when you have $30, $40, $50 billion a year, whatever the hell it is coming in, you know, you can't spend that. You can't do anything with it. So why not give it all away? That's what should happen. Bill Gates and Melinda Gates, do they have children? I don't even know. But they should give away 95%, 99% of that money. Why not? I damn sure would. If I had a fortune of $50 billion and I gave away 90% of it, that was still, the $50 billion, that would still leave me, what, $5 billion? Oh, please. Please. Oh, well, I'm looking at somebody else's checkbook. We have some open lines here. You want to get a comment in? 800-989-1480. By the way, tomorrow is Thursday. That's the last night I'm going to be on the air for a while. No. Wait. Don't panic. Friday, if the debate occurs, we will carry that debate, and then Jeff Farias at our affiliate in Phoenix will take your calls. All next week, I'll be off. Brad Friedman and Laura Flanders will be filling in for me all next week and the following Monday. So we're going to be gone for a while. Just some time off, okay? So that's Thursday. I'm sorry, Friday. Friday coming, all next week, and the following Monday. And filling in for me on Friday, if there is a debate, will be Jeff Farias. We'll offer up some commentary and take some phone calls about this first presidential debate. And then I think Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday is Laura. Is that right, Kathy? Laura Flanders? Oh, we don't. Okay. We think it's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then, oh, well, just tune in and listen to the people who will be filling in. We'll be gone for a week. Brian is calling from Keller, Texas, listening on the Internet. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah, I just wanted to discuss, when I went to school, I studied history. And to be honest with you, this precedent that starting with the buyout to this bank, I think is the largest transfer of ownership, I think, maybe in the country's history. It's just,
yeah.
I mean, we've just been duped. We've all just been totally duped. And, you know, my question is, what type of disclosure is Congress demanding from, you know, this figure they've come up with, the $700 billion buyout figure? How accurate is that?
I think it's a guess. I don't know where that figure came from, and I don't think the Senate or the House, with a few notable exceptions, I don't think anybody there is going to question anything. Certainly not the Democrats. The Democrats are like battered wives. The drunk husband comes home, beats the hell out of them, and the next morning apologizes, and the battered wife says, okay, I forgive you, and it happens again and again and again. So the Democrats are not going to question this. The Republicans don't give a damn because they're in on the scam. They couldn't care less. So I don't know what's going to happen. There are a couple, I think, a couple of senators, maybe a couple of representatives who are not going to just roll over on this and say, okay, go ahead. But they are going to be in the abject minority. So, talking with Ben Birch tonight on the program here, maybe what's going to happen, they'll get their $700 billion or their $800 billion or their $1.2 trillion or whatever it turns out to be, which is a stopgap measure. That's not going to solve anything. It's going to solve nothing.
Right.
But it's going to stave off the collapse until after the election. So,
And how could we not raise taxes? We have to raise taxes.
Well, sure. Of course we do. The only way to stop this, when you have 150 or 180 million workers in this country, I don't care what we do. If we're all reduced to pushing brooms, somebody is paying us, we're going to have to bail out of this through taxes. And that's why the idea of ending this corporatocracy that we're living under, we can't go back to a republic. Those days are over. They're gone. They are literally gone. So the only thing to do at this point, in my opinion, and it's just one person's opinion, is to move on to a form of democratic socialism. Nobody has to be afraid of the word socialism. Dear God, I mean, democratic socialism is what so many European countries have had for so long, and they seem to be doing quite well. But a form of democratic socialism, an absolute restrictive ceiling on what people can make in this country at the expense of other people, and try to get back to the business of rebuilding the country. I don't know what else. I have no idea what else to do, Brian. I have no idea.
Yeah, we got to balance the budget and get our deficit down. That's what Bill Clinton did, I'd hate to say Newt Gingrich's Congress did. And you can call it Democrat or Republican or whatever, but there's certain things that work, and it doesn't seem that the Republicans right now understand that, or the Democrats for that matter. And all I got to say is I'm crossing my fingers the next 40 days that we don't have another terrorist attack that the administration allows happen so that they can declare martial law and institute true fascism in this country. I'm just praying that that doesn't happen. And I'm sorry to say this. I may sound crazy, but, hello.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't even have to be another so-called terrorist attack, Brian. Bush, with his directives and this pro-fascist Congress, have passed enough legislation, and coupled with Bush's directives, all he has to do is, metaphorically speaking, push a button, and the whole thing ends. And martial law, fascism, whatever you want to call it, is here. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate you checking in.
Bob is calling from Tennessee, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Bob.
Good evening, Mike. You know, McCain's in a big hurry, isn't he, to get back to Washington?
Yeah, he's...
He hadn't cast a vote in the Senate since May.
Hey, hold on a second, Bob. I've got to do a break here. Let me do a break, and we'll come back and pick it up with McCain's lack of votes in the Senate. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered, Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch, podcast manager, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, and our two ethical advisors, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. The executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. We're talking with Bob in Tennessee, so back to Bob. All right, where were we?
Well, I was just reading in my Harper's Magazine, in the Harper's Index, that McCain hasn't cast a vote in the Senate since May. And all of a sudden he's in a hurry to get back?
You're right. Well, it's not to cast a vote or to make a decision. It's to run and hide, don't you think, Bob?
To dodge it.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the shock doctrine. This is enough for Article 51 or whatever the hell he calls it.
Mm-hmm.
This is all we need is... The question is to turn these tinfoil hats into steel helmets, because it's time to wake up.
Yeah.
This is what they did in Chile,
yeah.
September 11th, 1973.
That's right.
Is not the date to remember. You go back the previous 2, 3, 4 months and look at what was happening, what AT&T was doing,
mm-hmm.
what the CIA was doing. They did it in Argentina. They did it in Chile.
One slight correction. I think it was IT&T, International Telephone and Telegraph, not AT&T.
Beg your pardon.
Yeah, that's right. That's okay.
This alphabet soup is pretty thick, isn't it?
It is indeed, and it's hard to keep track of the corporate monsters who order up the assassination or the overthrow of a duly elected government, because that government might decide to tax or otherwise restrict the predatory capitalism that the American corporation is used to practicing. So it's easy to the only reason I know that, Bob, is because I got very interested. I had a friend, believe it or not, a friend here in Atlanta, who worked on the Chilean desk of the CIA during the 70s. And I didn't know that at the time, but I came to realize it in the early 80s, and he and I had some discussions about it. His only defense was he was not actually in Chile. He worked at Langley or wherever the hell it is, but he was on the Chilean desk. And from my understanding, his function, he was more or less a paper pusher. But it was shocking to me to hear from him, in addition to all the reports from places like The Nation or The New Republic, what really happened down there. But to hear directly from this friend, and I still occasionally see him around town, around Atlanta. But to hear that entire story, it was just horrifying. So that's the only reason I know it was IT&T and not AT&T. That's all. Sorry for the correction.
Oh, hey. I, I can stand being corrected. I'm through the looking glass.
aren't we all? Aren't we all? All right, well, thanks, Bob. I appreciate you checking in, okay? All right, take care, man. I think it was ITT. I don't think it was ITNT. I don't think there was an and. It just ITT. But, yeah, they that was one of the corporations that got in touch with Henry Kissinger, this leering son of a bitch who really had his 80-something heart pumped up a little bit. Yeah, right? When you saw those pictures, we talked about it last night. You know, McCain and now Kissinger. You know, just checking out Palin's ass like there's no tomorrow. And it was Kissinger who said, of course, that power is the greatest aphrodisiac. But not for you. No soup for you. No soup for you, Henry. No. Can you imagine what that conversation must have been like between Palin and Henry Kissinger? Did they compare notes on how to kill things? I can't. You know, Kissinger, this kind of old world, neoliberal, Jewish kind of guy sitting there talking to a Christian nutcase Armageddonist who you know, on the great getting up morning would just as easily slice a huge gaping wound into Henry Kissinger's neck as she would field dress her moose. And there they sit. How could Kissinger take this seriously? Somebody must have said to him, Dr. K, listen, we know you're old, we know you're decrepit, but if you're nice to this lady, maybe, you never know, maybe, you might. Oh, well. Kissinger and Palin. Good God Almighty. Greg is calling from Sun City, Arizona, listening to KPHX. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Malloy. I love your rants. God bless you, man. I love listening to you. Hey, I think we saw a glimpse of the future tonight with McCain running off to D.C. and getting rid of the debate on his side. I think that it's definitely going to be an open door to suspending the election and our habeas corpus. And I'm kind of worried about you. What are you going to do when they come for you, Mike?
Probably resist as much as possible, and then when they taser me and tie me up with a wire, I don't know, probably get disappeared. How about you?
Well, we'll need you as a leader.
Oh, no, not me. I'm just an observer. Guys like you, Greg, are the leaders.
I'm too old.
Well, you're too old. Who the hell do you think you're talking to?
You sound so darn young. What are you, 35?
Yeah, right.
I think that we ought to let these, as you say it so eloquently, fascist bastards fall on their swords. Really.
I don't know what else to do. You know, corporate America is no more interested in preserving the republic than they're interested in anything else other than profits. That's just the nature of corporate America. So, you know, they set this up. Let them deal with it. Like the older people in my family used to say, you made your bed, now you got to lay in it. Greg, thanks. I appreciate it, man. Got to go. Take care. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. All right, thanks for hanging out tonight. Take care. Keep it lit. Don't go nuts. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.